Welcome. Welcome to this meeting, this benefit for Prison Radio. How many of you have heard Mumia Abu-Jamal speak over Prison Radio on the radio here or everyone? So you know why we have to have a benefit for Prison Radio. This meeting is sponsored by Prison Radio, by the Labor Action Committee to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal, and by the Prisoners of Conscience Committee. My name is Carol Seligman. I'm from the Labor Action Committee. And we have a full program of some wonderful speakers tonight. And we know we're in an emergency situation for Mumia. So tonight's speakers are going to help us get oriented about what we can do to get him free. Because that's what we want to do. That's the whole intention of people in this room. This is an innocent man on death row, and he must be set free. Our first speaker tonight is Pam Africa. And I think you all know who she is. She is the spokeswoman for the International Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal, and has been working on his case and for his freedom from the beginning of his frame-up. Please welcome Pam Africa.
Okay. Thank you, Norman Louis. I'm gonna have to start off by thanking the organizers of this great event. And it's really good being back here in San Francisco and seeing so many people I haven't seen in a while, and seeing that you're still strong and still committed to take this motherfucker down, okay? I just learned today that Sean Bell case, who was before the U.S. Attorney General, Eric Holder, just turned down, upheld everything that the police did. It was on the front pages, I understand, of the Amsterdam News, that the cops won on every last thing. They walked away free for cold-blooded murder. Clearly an innocent person. And they can get away with that if we allow them to get away with that. A lot of people say, you know, like going to the U.S. Justice Department, well, what's the use in going there, because they're not going to do anything anyway. And here's another example. It's always going to be that way if we accept the wrong that they do. No one has the right to do wrong. That's what John Africa taught us, and we live by that. We are the uncompromising International Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Mumia's life, like Kevin Cooper's life, and a lot of other brothers that's on death row, a lot with evidence of innocence. Kevin Cooper, like Mumia, have clear evidence of innocence, and they're battling. And for the very existence. Mumia's case right now, they tell us that, you know, and we don't accept it, that Mumia has two things going for him: life in prison without the possibility of parole, or a death sentence. And we're saying that both of these things are unacceptable. You have people who believe in this system and don't believe that the people together can knock this motherfucker down. And you know, for people who is sort of wheezy about that word, if you can give me another word to call these people, describe them, you know, for what they have done, and can you give me that word? I'm saying, you know, you can't describe things that are ugly, that is masochistic, and that is murderous. You can't describe these people with words, or some people want to call them, you know, nice words. We can't do that. And you know, for those who is sort of weak to that, you know, I'm very sorry that, but I don't make no apologies. Thank you. Mumia life is not in the hands of this government. Neither is Kevin Cooper's. His life, their lives is in our hands. It's what we will accept and what we won't accept. A lot of us have taken on over the years certain activities. My activity from John Africa and my family was to put the necessary information out and are to free Mumia, gather all the facts and make sure that it get out, and to raise the necessary funds, not so much for the lawyers, but for the movement and the lawyers, and so that the information can get out, so that people can raise the consciousness and do the work. In 1995, when the death warrant was signed on Mumia's behalf, there was thousands and thousands of people in every city doing mass movement for Mumia. That's because they truly believed that they can win. Now, this government has like done one thing right after another to dupe people into thinking that we're not winning. But I want to give you some examples, because like the last poet says, the revolution will not be televised. People are sitting around waiting to see what CNN say, what CBS say, what the other ones say. But I want to give you an insider's, report on the movement for Mumia. Okay, these people are definitely afraid of this movement. Definitely afraid, because other than that, Mumia would have been dead. There's examples all the way to go back to 95, when Governor Casey was getting ready to sign Mumia's death warrant. It had been placed on his desk two times. We fought it back. And I'm shorting these stories up, because I want to show the power of the people. And when they say it can't be done because it hasn't been done, it's because we wasn't consistent in doing it. You can't call for a one-day demonstration, get fired up and ain't taking no more, fired up on Tuesday, ain't taking no more, fired up on Wednesday, ain't taking no more, and then wait till the next thing comes and then you're fired up again. Because see, they play with us with time. When you fired up, you have to be consistent. You have to keep a foot straight in their behind to make them understand that when we say fired up, we're not dealing with your time, we're dealing with our time. Because we must build a mass movement. And with the understanding that these people that we're fighting, like we're fighting for Mumia's life, we're fighting for our lives, these people are fighting for their way, their death style is what they're fighting for. We're fighting for the life of people. So you better understand that they're gonna fight with everything that they got. They control the media. They control the politicians from the top to the bottom. But they don't control the people. And when I'm gonna talk about these examples, when Governor Casey was in, when we went to see Governor Casey, wanted to see Governor Casey about him not signing a death warrant for Mumia because we had evidence. People said it was impossible. Don't go there and you're only gonna get Mumia killed, and it's never, it ain't something we can do. Of course we had mostly lawyers telling us that, and people that wore three-piece suits, and people in politics saying that, right? But to make a long story short, Dave Richardson told us that all we had to do was be able to get all the people together, get them from every walk of life and every religion that there is, and go up against the government. We did it. To make a long story short, we won that. We had the meeting with Casey. We beat back the death penalty. Then they threw it, and let me tell you something. This was not done by politicians. It wasn't done by, these lawyers and, people with big money. It was done by grassroots people who would not accept the fact that you cannot see a governor until the last death warrant is signed. It was done in 94, and it hasn't been done since. That's an example of people power, and these people is always telling you it can't be done. You push them people to the side. They tell you it can't be done. It was done. I remember another example, because there's a lot more in between there, but when we called for millions for Mumia in Philadelphia, some people were saying, millions for Mumia, what's with that? And then it was like on Mumia's birthday. Millions for Mumia had nothing to do with Mumia's birthday, but it had something to do with us showing this government that how we can massively pull people together to deal with a situation here. When Mumia's death warrant was signed in 95 by Governor Ridge, and we beat that death warrant back, State Senator Dole went on the TV stating that they will introduce a legislation that is a sure kill on Mumia. And our organ was having microphonic seizures because they was messed up. Because the movement, when this mighty super Hitler spitting motherfucker got into office, and he was under the impression that he had power. But the power is truly in the people. Because what he said, I'm going to tell you his fears. What governor do you know comes on and say, when I come at my inauguration, I'm going to have the Marines there. The Army going to be there. This is what the man is saying on TV. And we going to have the police forces there. Why was they saying that? Because of the movement for Mumia. Because we told him we was coming the day of his inauguration. The power that happened on that day, and Governor Ridge is making his acceptance speech, and you can hear in the background these signs. They say death row, we say hell no. They say death row, we say hell no. And the cameras were like sort of jiggling as he was beginning to make his speech, and it was getting louder and louder, and the camera turned around, and what you saw was the mass of the people. And you saw white Catholic nuns with their fists thrown up in the air. They say death row, we say hell no, because we made them understand that standing at the Capitol, the day that the death warrant is signed, I'm saying it's good doing all of that stuff. And but you got to do something more. You can't wait till no death warrant is signed to get into the streets and throw your fist up in the air and let these people know what you're going to accept and what you're not going to accept. When they threw them cameras on the people that was marching, the blacks that had taken the street, the Latinos, the rich, the poor had taken the street, they showed you where the power was. It wasn't in this powerless man that was standing there stating, you know, when he got in, he's going to kill Mumia. They threw it where the people was. And that's where the power was. Governor Ridge signed Mumia's death warrant twice. We beat that death warrant down two times. Now, that day, when we did that demonstration, that's when they started saying that they're going to introduce this legislation. We found out when the legislation was introduced, it was known as the Effective Death Penalty Act. This is where they tried to bury habeas corpus. And you know, we'll let some people, for those who don't know, we'll tell you about all those rights that they took away from us to get at Mumia. How do you know, Pam Africa, that the Effective Death Penalty Act was for Mumia? Very easily. The people that did it, and who drafted it, was the now governor of Pennsylvania, who was the DA, and who was present, during Mumia's trial, him and the Pennsylvania Attorney General now, and both of them was running for the office. They were on WHYY. See, these fools, they're fools. People think that they're intelligent, so they're gonna boast and brag about what it is that they're gonna do. They stated, and this was after Millions for Mumia. I'm gonna tell you, Millions for Mumia was not about his birthday, because the Effective Death Penalty Act went into effect April 24, 1996. Mumia's birthday is April 24. They wanted to send us a loud, clear message, because what we did in 95 showed them where the power was at. So these powerless punks come up with this Effective Death Penalty Act, which went around the United States, and it don't only affect Mumia, it affects everybody. So here, Governor Ridge, the new governor, Ed Rendell, who was mayor at this time, who's running for governor, and Mike Fisher, and on WHYY, and they're doing all the stuff, how this one don't like the other one, and they're running for governor. So the guy asked me, he said, but what about the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal? What can you tell us about this? So Ed Rendell said, oh, I'll answer that, Mike. Now they're on friendly things with Mike, so he said, you go ahead, Ed. And so he says, well, I'm gonna tell you about this case. He says, I'm gonna see to it personally that Mumia Abu-Jamal is executed. He says, let me tell you how it happened. He said, what's the dude's name? Faulkner, Danny, they call him. Danny was sitting in his car. He says, and all of a sudden, here come Mumia Abu-Jamal. He eases up behind him, and the coward he is, took and stuck the gun to Danny's head, pulled the trigger, shot Danny. Danny falls out the car, then he proceeds to shoot him some more. Well, this is a lie that they had never told before. Everybody knew that they got a different lie. And also, anyway, then Mike says, well, you know, we drafted the effective death penalty act. He said, yes, yes, me and Mike. This is the district attorney who went to Lynn Abraham, who got an illegal warrant to come to move house and, you know, shot thousands of pounds of ammunition. My sister gave you that story. This is the person that also went to Lynn Abraham and got an illegal warrant for them to drop a bomb, killing 11 men, women, and children of my family. Mumia Abu-Jamal was the reporter that reported him. They hated him. His Panther background, his non-bending, non-kiss-up, suck-up, you know, to the, to the government. Okay, and when Governor Ridge, I mean, when they made these statements, it was very clear that we was on the money. And the effective death penalty act was written for Mumia. And it was taking everybody else down. But what I want, you know, the things that people say that's impossible because they have never been done before don't mean that they cannot be done. And I'm saying to free Mumia, you don't have to do everything that there is that's supposed to be done. In 95, when the Labor Committee stated that they were going to shut down the West Coast, a lot of people didn't believe it. They gotta be crazy. I'm not supporting that. But the thing is, it happened. They didn't shut it down one day, they shut it down a day and a half. They shut it down. And and then people believe that these things can happen. And I say this, you know, where we're at with Mumia's case right now, there's a lot of things going on. Jack will talk about what Labor is doing, but again, Eric Holden, let me tell you one thing. We don't believe in none of these punks in government. They're all frauds. They all need to be feathered, tarred, and whipped, and thrown out of town from the top to the bottom. But what I'm saying is, we're talking about building and we're talking about raising a movement to go up against these people. And when they say it ain't for two things, no, that's not true. So we're not sitting around waiting. We're building a movement, continue to build a movement, and telling people, those who say that it's got to die, there's fire in the sky, if Tookie die, it's fire in the sky, I ain't seen a damn match yet. Okay? So I'm saying, stop fucking talking and playing games. Our lives is on the line. Whatever it is that you say you're going to do, do it and be about it. And stop doing this and do it. You ain't got to tell nobody what you're going to do. Let us read it in the paper, okay? But what my activity is to do is to agitate, to bring people together and do these things that they think that we cannot do. Yeah. Eric Holder has a position where he is supposed to, you're supposed to be able to go there. They take your money, our money, to put this punk in office. Everybody glorified with this black man in office and all this black president in office, they must do. Sean Bell must be, we can't allow that to go on. Kevin has another petition over there to them to look into this case. We cannot allow these people to, you know, just rob us, take our money, and then say, fuck y'all, we ain't doing nothing. I'm saying this man is in a position where he is supposed to look at these cases because we do have the evidence. We're not going to be like some people do and let them get off the hook and say they ain't going to do nothing anyway. We're going to build the movement. We're going to continue to build the movement, having people going to them churches, going into them classrooms, and showing people this is the evidence here. This is what they're supposed to believe in. They teach every last one of these students to believe in this government. We must make them stand up to this government, because if it's not right, we're supposed to turn this sucker out. They wrote it. And with that, I'm saying we need people to be on the corners. I'm coming down. And we need people on the corners with these petitions. They need to be seen. This is not the only thing that got to be done. Somebody got something better to do? Get up and say it. Okay? Get up and say it. Get up and do it. You know, or other than that, come on and get online. I'm saying that we'll support that too. But, you know, don't sit and tell us that, you know, that ain't gonna work. You know, we ain't gonna do that. Why are you going to them? And all I'm saying, you know, we're going to them because they're one other group of people that we're supposed to go to. You know, so with that, I'm gonna say, on the move, rise up, do what it is that you're supposed to do. Oh. What we gotta do, I'm saying it's an insult what Eric Holder just did with Bell. And I'm not telling the sister over here, tear your petition up and throw it away. I'm saying we supposed to rise up and fight these motherfuckers. Who do they think we are? What do they think we're supposed to take? These are our children's lives. These are our wives, our husbands. If we allow them to get away with it, they'll continue to get away with it. So don't come tell me no stuff. Bypass them. It's not important. It's very important. Just like everything else people got to do. What I say with this, I say on the move, long live revolution, long live the power to pull all things together, and down with this rotten ass motherfucking system. Long live that. Shut it down. Somebody else to say
it. Our next speaker tonight is Prisoners of Conscience Committee Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. He's a founder of the Prisoners of Conscience Committee. He's a former political prisoner himself, and he's the son of the assassinated Black Panther leader, Fred Hampton.
Call to speak. Right on. Then,
free them all.
Let me say revolutionary appreciation for all the organizations that put this together, and definitely to the people in general. But the last 4 or 5 days, we've been on the man a tour to say enlightened from LA. By now, prior to that, you know, Oklahoma, Texas, LA, Compton, came back. Went to Chicago yesterday and just got back here this morning. And I'm a little sluggish, and we know it's struggle. We go through battle fatigue. We know struggle can weigh on the soul, but we also say, what Minister U.E.P. Newton said, I'm paraphrasing, said his mother said that her pastor said that a certain amount of suffering is good for the soul, and all the stuff we go through, I know we got some good souls in here. A lot of times we talk about these cases, these contradictions that we got to deal with on a day-to-day basis, everything from the decision coming down today about Sean Bell in New York, and the cases of just rampant police terrorism that goes out in our community on a day-to-day basis, and just in general how Black people in particular and oppressed people in general are treated. And it can be, again, it can be this demeaning and this demoralizing. And a lot of times we hear about, you know, this, with the state talking about they're gonna intensify their move on Mumiyahu Jamal, somebody else that got locked up, somebody got some trumped up charges, and we see the graphic depictions of the extent on how this government get out, what to be the photographs of 21-year-old Chairman Fred and 22-year-old Defense Captain Mark Clark brutally assassinated by the United States government, or whether it be the depictions of our people in Haiti on who this government got out on. And again, it can be demoralizing, and sometimes we say, man, you know, what are we struggling for, and can we win? We take a position that with Malcolm X, who, I guess for the record, we gotta mention that this is dated February 21st, Malcolm was assassinated. And how Malcolm has stated that we have no other choice but to struggle. He said, we're dealing with a system that even if we do lay down and let them walk over us, say, are you satisfied? This is a system that'll tell us, Black people in particular, to say, no, nigga, turn over. So we have to come to grips with the fact that we have no other choice but to struggle. It's a parasitical system, it's a parasitical politic, it's a blood-sucking system, it's a blood-sucking politic that not only thrives, but its whole mission is to wipe us out. And we gotta take a position that what Minister U.E.P. Newton said, that if we don't fight back, if we don't organize, it can be defined as nothing less than reactionary suicide. And speaking with battle fatigue, in struggle, I'm talking about these cases, we get a charge up also. Charge up, it comes in various forms, and forms like when we went to LA just recently.
Not here.
in response to this hearing that was posing around this, this criminal, Mercy, about even having a discussion about should this bond, who executed Oscar Grant, should his bond be lowered, or was his rights violated when he's arrested, which are blatant depictions on what type of system we're dealing with, even had this type of discussion, should his bond be lowered. The fact that he even is out on the streets. But it's a morale boost when you see forces that trek from all parts of the country and world that come up to LA. It's a morale boost to see the organizations and people from all walks of life that come to LA. It's a morale boost that when you see organizations and the people that are sending a statement to the system, that regardless, wherever you try to change this venue to, if you try to move this case to the moon, we're gonna get some spaceships and some suits, and we're gonna head up there. It's a morale boost to see we send a message to the system that not only will we mobilize the streets of Philadelphia, but Chicago, Oakland, Sacramento, you name it, and places where they don't even speak English yet. You know what I'm saying? And the demand for people, me and Free them all, is gonna be heard loud and clear. It's a morale boost that we get the word and we mobilize the people that we did, our people in Haiti. And then we send a message to the system that we respect no colonial borders. But we got a lot of stuff to deal with. And they strategically, like they'll flood us with, I guess, good term for like a shotgun blast. They'll hit us with a whole bunch of cases at the same time. Like, in fact, tomorrow morning, I'm in this information. J.I. got to go to court tomorrow. And since Nadja Foster, she got a court date the same day tomorrow. But we gotta be able to organize, you know what I'm saying, and strategically, you know what I'm saying, and be. If we can't be there in the flesh, the call in, the write-ins, all these play key roles. And we gotta, and I'm not saying this no cliche type of way to understand Van Cleer that what they said, the Sandinista said, that the will of the people is greater than the man's technology. And I just wanna say, this case, when we out with Jamal, we say this objectively. We look at these a personal thing, like say, okay, can't let me liquidate it to just, okay, I know we'll be out with Jamal, but what he represents? And we have to always look at these attacks objectively and be very clear that it's a war on our people. And again, we got to organize, we got to fight back, we got to pack these courthouses in, flood these call-ins in, and keeping our minds and our hearts all and remain clear. And use brutal terms. Because we say being oppressed is embarrassing. So a lot of times we try to jive ourselves about being oppressed. But we can acknowledge that we are victims, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, fighting back victims. I was talking to a brother earlier, right, a few minutes ago. And he was saying, man, you know, we expect this. You know, trumped up cases, they come into cases and locking somebody up, and even a lot of people say right now might be defined as conspiracy theory by this whole discussion of whether warfare would happen to Haiti. And a lot of people, when I talk to people, say, oh, here comes Chairman Fred again. I always blame the white man or the government. And I do. And we can get to the position, but we can expect it, but we must never become to the point that we accept it. Expect it, but don't accept it. If nothing else, to my man, what they said, to my even the spit against the tank, some resistance got to happen from all walks of life, not just the leadership, to my man, from band, from the valley, everywhere. It got to be resistance. They got to know when they come and make moves on us. When they talk about making moves on us, it's gonna be some resistance from Philadelphia to the Congo and all over the world. Right on. So we want the clarion call to be heard all over. We're not just talking about those who are held captive in those concentration camps. We're talking about our people in Haiti. We're talking about our forces in New Orleans. We're talking about the masses of people throughout the world. We want the clarion call to be made loud and clear so that Ann Patterson can hear it, so that Mumia Abu-Jamal can hear it, so that our counterparts in Haiti can hear it, so our forces down in New Orleans can hear it. We want the clarion call to be loud and clear, that we shake the ground at Alameda County Courthouse. Free them all. Free them all.
Free them all.
All Our next speaker is Ramona Africa. She's a survivor of the 1985 police bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. A former political prisoner herself and a member of the Move organization.
Thank you. I want to move. Long live revolution.
That's right.
We should never be afraid to say that or use that word.
Right.
As you heard, I am a former political prisoner. I'm the Minister of Communication for the MOVE organization. I am the sole adult survivor of the May 13th, 1985 bombing of MOVE. But most importantly, I'm a revolutionary. And I make no apologies for that. Anytime oppression, restraint violation, brutality, the viciousness of this system that we're living under exists, revolution is necessary.
That's right.
And revolution starts with self. You cannot be a revolutionary until you start thinking revolution. And you can't start thinking revolution until you understand revolution. John Africa, MOVE's founder, taught us the totality of revolution. It ain't just fighting cops. It ain't just fighting DAs, you know? It ain't just that. It is fighting the system in you. You know, fighting the system in ourselves. That's the main thing. Because too many people don't understand how deep-rooted that training is in us. We accept too many things easily. For example, a lot of people allow our enemy, our oppressor, to dictate to us and lay out for us the way in which we're allowed to resist them. I mean, what kind of sense do that make? The Germans allow Hitler to dictate to them how they, you know, needed to stop the Holocaust? Did black South Africans allow the apartheid regime to dictate to them how they were allowed to resist? You know, if slaves had sat back and waited for the slave master to tell them how they could end slavery, slavery would still exist in the same crystallized way today, because I ain't saying it would, you know, slavery exists today is what I'm saying, you know. But the thing is, we gotta get past that training. We gotta start thinking for ourselves, trusting ourselves. I mean, how in the world would it look for me, a survivor of the police bombing of my family, where they burnt babies alive, you know, burnt adults, men, women, or animals alive, and ain't nobody sitting on death row for that? How in the world am I going to sit back and allow them to even think about convincing me that my brother Mumia belongs on death row, that he should be executed? I don't give a shit what happened on the night of December 9th. It don't matter, because Mumia is not in jail for the accusation of murder. These people got folks tripping and thinking that their aim is justice. They never gave a damn about justice. They never gave a damn about justice. Mumia is in prison because he dared to speak out and stand up to these people. You know, they murdered my family for doing the same. They got my family, 8 of my family members, it was 9, they killed one of my sisters. Now he got 8 MOVE people in prison for 30 to 100 years each for a murder of a cop that they know my family didn't commit. But the point is, the same people that are calling my family murderers and saying that they deserve to be in prison for 30 to 100 years, the same people that had Mumia sitting on death row calling him a murderer, saying that he deserves to be executed, are the same motherfuckers that burnt our babies alive. Why ain't they in jail? If you believe that a person was deemed to have murdered should be in prison, should be executed, then apply it across the board, or you're lying. You got another agenda. Justice ain't got nothing to do with it. And that's, you know, the position of MOVE, because we ain't letting these people fool us into wasting our time and being diverted, going back and forth, you know, debating with people about Mumia's innocence. You know, we know Mumia's innocent, but that ain't even the issue. And we shouldn't allow them to divert us with the issue of what happened on December the 9th, because they've been after Mumia since he was 15 years old.
There you go.
That was long before December 9th in 1981. You know, we gotta stop playing games with these people and stop letting them dictate to us how we do things, how we resist them, you know, how we go about stopping them. We gotta do whatever it is it takes to stop them, to get them off our back. We gotta take back our lives and start trusting ourselves and stop thinking that we can't do nothing without these people, you know. I mean, MOVE people's position is that freedom is God-given, and ain't nobody got the right to take it away. Ain't nobody got the right to take it away. And we're not saying this because we endorse crime or believe in crime or murder, but we're saying this system do. This system do. Every time they get a chance, they killing, murdering, bombing, you know, poison in the air, poison in the water, poison in the earth that feed us. They don't give a damn about nothing that's alive. You know, all they care about is destroying. Ever since the inception of government, of politics, of this system, everything has gone downhill. Air that was once clean is now poison. Water that was once clean is now polluted. The earth is full of toxic waste. You know, you got cops, you know, shooting people down in the street, shooting them 50 times, 41 times, dropping a bomb on people, beating people to death. You know, I mean, what is it gonna take? How many more examples do we need? How many more Mumias? How many more babies burned alive? You know, how many more Marilyn Buffs? You know, how many more Dilsia Pagans or Leonard Peltiers or Dr. Matulu Shakur? How many more? You know, the handwriting is on the wall. Shouldn't be no convincing. Shouldn't have to be no convincing at this point. The only thing that any of us should be concerned with is what it is that we can bring to the table for our freedom. Let me make this clear. This ain't about Mumia. This ain't about MOVE. You know, it ain't about Leonard, for real. It's about each and every one of us. Because what we're talking about here is for our protection, our freedom. You know, the protection of our family members, our mates, our babies. You know, it's for all of us. Mumia don't do what he do for Mumia. He do it for all of us. My family, the MOVE Nine, they ain't sitting in jail doing 30 to 100 years for themselves. They are taking a principled stand and refusing to stop fighting this rotten ass system for all of us. To set an example for all of us. What I'm saying is we better realize that nobody can tell us exactly what we should do. But what we can be told is that we better be doing something. We better be doing something. The only unacceptable thing is doing nothing. You know, from something as seemingly simple as writing a letter, you know, if you have a computer, using it to draw up flyers or to send out information, if you're parents with young children, get together with other parents and work together on a schedule, you know, watching the children so that you can be more involved and do more. If you have a car, you know, and you see people working their butts off and don't have a car, offer to drive them around when you have time. If you like to cook, you know, when a big thing is going on and people are working like crazy, cook some food and take it to them and feed them. You know, all of this is important and part of being involved in revolution and caring for each other. I don't care if you are the most cosmetic person on the face of the earth with your Louis Vuitton shoes and Gucci bag. Get together with your other bougie friends, put on a fashion show, raise some money, do whatever to be involved. There is something that everybody can do, you know? And it seems funny, it seems simple, but it's what it takes. It's what it takes. People don't realize that the seemingly smallest thing is important and can help, you know? We weren't all on the level we are now in thinking, you know, revolution. It was a path getting there. And you have to pull in all kinds of people. And people need to understand that whatever you feel like you can contribute to this fight, it's good. It's important because all it can do is push you further on down that path. In the work for Mumia, there was a woman named Linda, and she came around and she said, I'm going to tell you right now, I am not opposed to the death penalty. I believe in the death penalty. Somebody shoot my son, kill my daughter, I want him executed. But I don't believe that Mumia belongs on death row. I believe he's innocent. And some people was like, look, get her out of here. We ain't trying to hear that. But my sister Pam was explaining to him, no, you bring her on in and you educate her along the way. Now this sister is a staunch anti-death penalty opponent. You know, I mean, you work with people, you teach them, you bring them along, you set an example for them. That's the work the MOVE organization is doing, setting an example. This organization is almost 40 years old now. We've been around since the early 70s. And this government have come at us with everything it's got. It has beat us up. You know, beat pregnant, move women into miscarriage, beat, stomp them until they suffer miscarriages, trampled a three-week-old baby to death, you know, beat our brothers into broken limbs and concussions. I mean, to the point where they put my family in jail for 100 years each, and then came out and dropped a bomb on us. You know, burnt people alive. We are alive. We're living beings. We got feelings. We can be hurt. But God damn it, we won't be stopped. And that's what's important. We won't be stopped. People ask us, you know, how we keep going, how we keep fighting for Mumia, because we've been there from day one, from the day that they tried to kill Mumia and arrested him and charged him with murder. We were there, and we're still there, you know. It's been 25 years this year since the bombing and assassination, murder of our family, and we're still out there. My MOVE family have been in prison going on 32 years. This August, it will be 32 years. And despite all that this government have come at us with, we're still out here fighting because we understand it is not a matter of choice. What choice do you have? They're going to try to kick your ass whether you fight back or you don't. Amadou Diallo wasn't a revolutionary. He wasn't out in the streets slinging his fists up in the air talking about down with the system. He wasn't doing that. I'm not criticizing him, but he wasn't doing that. But they killed him nevertheless. He was a victim nevertheless. So these people ain't never told you or promised you that if you go along with the program that you'll be cool, you'll be safe. They ain't never promised you that. A bully will bully you as long as they feel like they can bully you. Now, you can say you want to fight back, but, you know, I might get beat up. He beat me. He beating you up anyway. Getting your ass kicked anyway. And you ain't fighting back. What more is going to happen if you fight back? You know, we got to understand that taking the low road, trying to fade into the background is not your protection. It's not your security. When something is threatening you, John Africa teaches us that the only solution is to get rid of that threat. Can't run from it, can't hide from it. You got to get rid of that threat. And that's what MOVE is committed to doing, getting rid of what is threatening all of life, every living being. We're working to get rid of it. We have some information back there. People should make sure you get at least something, you know, to understand what's happening with MOVE. And I say that in terms of the work that we are doing for all of life, for every living being, because that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. Ain't no categories, ain't no separations, you know. We are doing this for all of life. So stay strong, you know. Do whatever we got to do, not simply to bring Mumia home, not only to save his life, but to save our own life. Because we can be the next Mumia, the next Tookie Williams, the next Sean Bell. You can walk right out this door tonight, going home, driving home, and get stopped by a cop and end up dead. You know? I mean, this is real. This ain't something far-fetched or a dream. It can happen and does happen. So the work we're doing is for ourselves. On the MOVE, long live revolution, long live all those that believe in freedom and fight for freedom. Long live all the JRs, the Chairman Freds, the Marilyn Buffs, you know, the Leonard Peltiers, the Puerto Rican Independentistas, the Zapatistas, you know, those Native Indigenous grandmothers in Arizona and Big Mountain, Arizona, you know. Long live Earth First, the Earth Liberation Front, the Animal Liberation Front. Long live all those that believe in freedom enough to fight for it. Long live the spirit of resistance, and down with this rotten ass.
There's a lot of people standing up in the back, but there's some empty seats here in the front. Would you raise your hand if there's an empty seat next to you? So come on up, folks, if you would like to sit down. Our next speaker is Jack Heyman. He's an executive board member of Local 10 of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, the ILWU. He's a member of the Labor Action Committee to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal, and he was one of the organizers of the historic West Coast port shutdown to free Mumia in 1999.
Thank you, Carol. We're going to start off with the video of the 1999 port shutdown in March in San Francisco. Can you roll it? Put it on. Audio, please.
Gilligan sitting in for Julie Hayner.
Activists walk off the dock through the streets of San Francisco today and try and stop the Philadelphia execution. I'm Bert Hawkins. Story's going
ahead. A huge demonstration today in San Francisco to protest the scheduled execution of a man who's now known around the world. Mumia Abu-Jamal is on death row in Pennsylvania, convicted of killing a police officer almost 20 years ago. His writings about the American justice system have made him somewhat of an international celebrity. Well, today's rally coincided with his 45th birthday. Vern Hawkins reports.
Dock workers say Saturday's a big overtime day to move tons of goods that come through ports. They say nothing moved on the day shift today. Instead, longshore workers, labor leaders, and social activists made a two-hour march in San Francisco to protest and try to stop the execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal, convicted of killing a Philadelphia police officer 18 years ago.
I think people are recognizing that what we're experiencing really is a crisis in democracy. It's not only about Mumia Abu-Jamal, it's about a prison system that is larger and larger, and that focuses on punishment for profit.
Dock workers say today's the day to come here instead of going to work. stop work rallies affect all 22 ports along the West Coast.
Whether you're Chicano, Native American, we got to do
another rally in Philadelphia drew more than 3,000 people, some from far away as France.
What we want to tell the workers in Pennsylvania is that what the Longshore Union is doing out here in California, they can do in Pennsylvania and save the life of Mumia Abu-Jamal. If the black transit workers in Philadelphia and the bus drivers and the steel workers in Pittsburgh decided that this is an important case, as we have decided, then it's in their power to stop the death machine.
Back in the early 70s, Mumia Abu-Jamal, former Black Panther member, took to the airwaves to protest what he called police repression of the black community. Just months after the death of the officer, Jamal was sentenced to death. Supporters call his trial a mockery.
I thought the first trial was a travesty, and the establishment and the media, particularly in the East, have taken up cudgels to prevent the last thing in the world is another trial. And our objective is to get that trial before they off him by keeping Mumia in prison, who has become one of the great moral voices of this decade. We are putting ourselves in the position to the world of being oppressors.
Free Mumia now!
Our petition is before the Supreme Court to review Jamal's case. If that doesn't happen, his execution is expected to take place within a year. In San Francisco, Bert Hawkins, the 10 o'clock news.
Okay. Lights, please. Thank you. That was 1999. We're 11 years from that now. And during that period, from 95 to 99, the Mumia movement was building larger and larger each year. But since that time, it's been dwindling. And I believe, and the Labor Action Committee to Free Mumia believes, that Judge Yon's decision to stay the execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal disoriented and disarmed a lot of people in the Mumia movement. A lot of people thought, well, maybe there is justice in this system. But we in the Labor Action Committee believe that in this racist capitalist system, Mumia and any of the oppressed that are in prison will not get justice. That's why the call to free them all is appropriate. We believe all class war prisoners, and Mumia is the one of the foremost class war prisoners, should be freed. Now, the Labor Action Committee believes that we need to use all legal resources that are available to defend Mumia. But we have no confidence that Mumia will get a fair trial, a fair hearing, and that's been demonstrated. At the same time that this was going on, the longshoremen shutting down every port on the West Coast to demand freedom for Mumia, and we were marching down the streets of San Francisco saying, an injury to one is an injury to all, free Mumia Abu-Jamal. That was a very powerful statement, and it got out to the media. But what didn't get out very much in a positive light was what the teachers here in Oakland were doing. Because they had a teach-in, and it was organized in large part through our Labor Action Committee. Bob Mandel, Eric Bergman, Bob Wells, all played important roles in that action. And if you remember what happened back in 1999, a cop got killed here. The papers went berserk. It was hysteria about how can you have a teach-in in the Oakland schools when a cop, a police officer, they said, has been murdered. And you're going to have a teach-in about somebody who murdered a cop. And this is the kind of hype that's being put across in the media. And this is what we are trying to confront. This is what the story that we're saying is that an innocent man, Mumia Abu-Jamal, is about to be executed by the state. And how ironic that there would be a black president and a black attorney general that oversaw his execution. And we've got to stop that. We've got to stop it. I want to say that we learned from our experience in the Labor Action Committee. We go back to 1984, In the port of San Francisco, there was a ship that came in from South Africa. Howard, where are you? Howard Kaler was on the executive board of the Longshore Union, and he introduced a motion that said we will hit the next ship that comes in from South Africa to protest the apartheid system there. Black brothers and sisters were getting shot down in the street, just trying to form unions over there. A basic right like that was being denied, and they were being shot down like dogs. And when that ship came in, and you have to remember, if you saw the video, most of our members, the overwhelming majority of Local 10, are African American. David Hilliard, actually, at one point was a member of our local. So, for 11 days, we struck against a ship from South Africa. Howard played a leading role in that, but so did other members of the Labor Action Committee. Bob Mandel was an activist at that time. Chris, who else? Gerald, you were an active participant in that as well. And so was I. But the point I'm making here is that we've learned from experience that there's no justice in this system. You got to fight for it. You got to win it. And you got to use the power that we have. As working people, you shut down production. By shutting down production, you have power. That's the only power that workers have under capitalism. And we attempt to harness that power. If you go into our union hall, the Longshore Union in San Francisco, you'll see a mural to the International Labor Defense. That was the defense organization that defended the ILWU, the Longshore Union, during the big strike in 1934. That ILD, the International Labor Defense, was an early defense arm of the Communist Party in this country, when it was a revolutionary party. And the founding leader of the International Labor Defense, James Cannon, said, "We have no confidence in the racist capitalist system. We have all confidence in the working class to defend our own." And that early revolutionary movement brought together all the political forces and the oppressed, the left and the oppressed, to defend Sacco and Vanzetti, the Italian immigrants who were actually executed. It was not successful, the mobilizations that took place. But they learned from that, and the next big case they took on was the Scottsboro Boys, and they won. The Scottsboro Boys were 9 black youth in Alabama that were framed up for raping a couple of white girls. And that was a major, major case in this country that the labor movement got behind, and we won it. And it showed that by mobilizing the labor movement, you do have power. So we have our differences within the Mumia movement. The Labor Action Committee doesn't believe that petitioning campaign to Holder or Obama is going to free Mumia. We believe that there's not a lot of time left because they're moving very quickly and the legal avenues are being cut off. And so we need to use the power that we do have. So I want to just say that I was in the civil rights movement back in 64 in Atlanta. We had the same question come up. We're getting our asses kicked by the cops. I was in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC. We weren't really that nonviolent because by that point we were being won over to people like Malcolm X and Robert Williams, who the book Negroes with Guns said, you have a right to defend yourself. And so we started to realize that when we were under attack, for instance, on one occasion, the Ku Klux Klan was marching on Atlanta. So what we did, we didn't go to the cops and say, oh, the Klan is marching, come protect us. We went into the bars, we went on the streets with our bullhorns, we pulled people out of the bars, and we said, the Klan is marching on our city. Let's stop them. And we did. Not nonviolently. Because when we got finished, those white robes were red. If you know what I mean. So I want to say that I don't have much time to hold the applause, please. Thurgood Marshall made a brilliant statement once. He was the first black Supreme Court justice. He said, that it's a rite of passage in racist America for a young black man to have a confrontation with the police. It happens all the time. All the time. You know, and SNCC, we would say, well, the cops wear blue in the daytime and white at night. We knew that. We knew where they were coming from. But Mumia learned the hard way. You remember, if you know, I read a little bit about Mumia. His first epiphany was he was protesting against George Wallace in the presidential campaign in Philadelphia. And these racists were coming after him and his friends. And all of a sudden they saw the cops and, oh God, the cops are going to come and protect us. The cops came and beat the shit out of him. He says they beat him all the way into the Black Panther Party. That's right. So, you know, we don't depend on the police or the cops or the system, the courts, for justice. We have to fight for that every inch of the way. And there was a split in the civil rights movement at that time. The ones who held the position that you don't go to the FBI to report police brutality were the black nationalists and the reds. Because we thought that by going to the FBI, you're going to the very people that are committing the crimes. They're the perpetrators. The Fraternal Order of Perpetrators. FOP. If you check it out historically, the FBI knew in advance of the murder of Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner. They knew about Viola Liuzzo, the civil rights worker that was coming down from Detroit before she got murdered. And they, I believe the King family is right. It was the FBI, this government, that murdered Martin Luther King. They got blood on their hands. Look at the COINTELPRO. Brother Fred Hampton Jr.'s father was one of the 38 Panthers that was murdered by this government, by the FBI. And the government is proud of it. They don't hide that. So Rodney King says, well, can't we all just get along? I don't know. Maybe we should ask Messerly, huh? Who shot Oscar Grant in cold blood. We need to reaffirm the right to self-defense. That's the beginning. Now, I only have a minute left, so I got to run through this. It's a question. All right, I guess my time's up. I just want to say that we need to wake up and realize that the Obama administration is not going to do anything to free Mumia. Obama is surging in Afghanistan because people will believe that a Democratic president is going to bring an end to the war. They believe it. Can I get 30 seconds more?
Yeah.
Look, Obama has already proved himself, and so has Holder. All right? Gates. Obama was right when he said cops acted stupidly, handcuffing a cop as a professor in his own house. They acted stupidly.
Yes.
And then he wanted a teachable moment because maybe the cops weren't wrong. You know, and so he whitewashed that.
Okay.
You know? Van Jones from here in Oakland. Van Jones.
Yeah.
When the whole thing came out about this 9/11 petition that he had signed, it made it kind of shaky. But as soon as they heard about Mumia, Van Jones was gone the next day. And then finally, this Reverend Jeremiah Wright. What's wrong with saying, when you're talking about foreign policy and what the United States has done, to say, God damn America. What's wrong with that? But in no time at all, Mumia dropped him, admonished him publicly, and, Barack Obama. We can't have any illusions about the nature of this government. We've got to fight it every inch of the way. We've got to demand freedom from Mumia Abu-Jamal. Unfortunately, I didn't plan my remarks very carefully because I had about halfway through. So just join me in one chant, please, what we chanted in 99 marching down Market Street. An injury to one is an injury to all, free Mumia Abu-Jamal. An injury to one is an injury to all, free Mumia Abu-Jamal. An injury to one is an injury to all, free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Thank you.
There's still some seats up in the front if people want to come up. I'm proud to introduce Richard Brown, a former San Francisco AIDS defendant, and he will give us an update on Francisco Torres and what's left of the San Francisco AIDS case.
All power to the people.
Power to the people.
Brothers and sisters, thank you for having me here tonight. I want to start out by saying I am living proof that power does lie in the hands of the people. I believe that. I've believed that ever since I was a Panther. When I joined the Panther Party, I had the nerve to resist in a manner that was not acceptable to the establishment, like the sister said. And the more we did, the more they came down on us. Eventually, the establishment released its dogs on us, which was the local police and the FBI. They started killing us and slaughtering us and did everything they could to kill every Panther that they could catch in the street. If it weren't for my community saving me, if it weren't for them being there and refusing to allow the police to murder me every time they pulled me over, I would be dead now, and I know that. I got caught in several shootouts because I believed when I said, if you attack me, I will fight back. I meant that. And when I ran out of bullets, I was exposed, and so therefore my community again had to come and save me. When I got arrested, the community would follow me all the way to the police station. They would stay there, demand that some bail bondsman get me out, whether they had the money or not, and bring me back home. That's how I survived being a Panther. Years later, they came because of that and arrested me and seven other brothers, which is the San Francisco 8, took us to jail, said they had 300 witnesses, a murder weapon, DNA, fingerprints, and God on their side. So there was no way that we were ever supposed to get out. 8 black men accused of killing a police officer and several other police officers throughout the United States. Everything that happened between 68 and 73, they threw it on us. So what they didn't depend on, what they didn't count on was, again, the support of the people, the masses. The people came to our support, people from all over the world, people from all walks of life, Desmond Tutu, everybody from Desmond Tutu to the crack dealer on the street would come down to 850 Bryant Street and demand that the San Francisco AIDS be released. So when you look at me, you're looking at living, and I'm out. I'm here standing in front of you tonight because the charges were dropped against me and five other defendants. Because of you, the people's victory. That's the reason I'm standing here tonight, because the people demanded that the charges be dropped against the SFA. One other brother, Francisco Torres, still has a case. They are stalling and stalling and stalling every time they go to court. They put it off for a month or two. We went to court Thursday. They put it off until April the 19th. This is 3 years after we were initially arrested, and we still haven't had a preliminary hearing yet. They are stalling because what they would like is for you to forget about it. Most people here tonight thought that the charges were dropped against all of us. No, Francisco still has a charge. And we're asking you to show up on the April the 19th, to, as long as the people continue to support us and support him, he will someday be free also. So continue to support him, send a strong message that we're not gonna give him up, and Francisco will be at the next hearing that we have, a rally for Mayor, which we have to make sure that brother and all political prisoners are free also. So all power to the people. Thank you very much for your time.
Pierre Lavoisier is not here, right? Not here. But I think JR might have some updates about Haiti when he speaks. Our next speaker is Noelle Hanrahan. She's the founder of Prison Radio, the nonprofit that records and produces the voice of Mumia Abu-Jamal.
To be able to do this work and to be able to learn from the people that I actually get to ride around in the car with or drive around in the car with from San Jose to Santa Rosa in the last couple days, because it really makes a huge difference in my work to be able to get information from them. And you know, this is what we do. Prison Radio brings forth the voices of prisoners from inside. And I want to ask you a question. What is Prison Radio to Mumia Abu-Jamal? You know, Mumia once said, they would rather give me an Uzi than a microphone. It's really the method that we're building a resistance movement and we're tearing down the walls between us. Every week in and week out, Mumia Abu-Jamal uses one or two of his phone calls, he only gets three a week, to call and try and bridge the gap between us, between all of us, really. And Prison Radio has done this for a really long time, and we're going to continue to do it, but we can only do it with your help. Like right now, we probably, you know, Prison Radio does whatever we can do. Like what I said to myself when I first recorded Mumia was, I'm going to do every single thing I can do to make sure that Mumia's voice is heard. And what that means is, you know, the first two or three years, I had like $14,000 on my credit cards. It was the credit card Mumia movement in terms of getting that voice out. I made 14,000 copies on one of these jobs I had. I just like destroyed the printer. I was carting out like copies of things in like with a wheelbarrow. And lately it's been, I have to ask everybody for money all the time. And it's one of those things, I don't like to do it, and I know we phone bank you all a lot, and we try and get your information, but it's all of us. There are 3,000 people on our mailing list that give us $10 to $15. That means we're independent of any funding. We don't get funding from foundations. You know, even the ones that normally fund prisoner groups, you know, I had this really, you know, notable foundation once tell me, we can't fund you because Mumia Abu-Jamal is violent. You know, so we have a really hard time getting the funds together, but we end up doing it. We just do it. We do it, we do it, we do it, and we can only do it with you. There's like 100 people, 150 people in here. I want people to try and dig deep, reach into your pockets. I want to try and raise like $1,000 right now. It makes a difference for Prison Radio. We just spent, we bought plane tickets to get people here, to reach people out. You know, today we built this, we're trying to build this, we thought it was really important for Pam to be here, for Chairman Fred to be here, because if we don't stand up this weekend, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. really, we have to stand up for people like JR. JR's on trial for a felony trial tomorrow morning, there are these flyers in the back. It's like standing up for Mumia. Mumia's voice doesn't get out if JR is in jail, okay? I can't be on the streets in the way JR can be. I can't be at KBFA the way JR can be. It's Mumia's struggle. That's why this weekend's events are really happening in the way they are, because we have to do this. We have to stand with our people outside who are being targeted. And JR's being targeted outside, and Mumia's being targeted inside. So I know we're asking you to dig deep. Any amount that you can give is really important. There are people who can write a check for $1,000. Some of them may or may not be in this room, but let me tell you, it makes an enormous difference. That money is used to make posters that go all over the country and all over the world. It's used to buy plane tickets for people to see Mumia and break down those walls. When people are in need, when we need to get somebody who really can't get there to see Mumia, I just like crack open the credit card and pray that I can pay that credit card off. because it has to be done. You know, and everyone says, what can we really do?
Check.
What can each of us do?
Tell the check.
You can write a check to Prison Radio. It's a 501c3, tax deductible. We'll give you a receipt. And it is hard to raise money. It is hard to ask for money. And it is hard for sometimes people to give money to Prison Radio. But we wouldn't hear Mumia in the same way. We wouldn't see Pam and Ramon in the same way. Somebody else would step up and do it, I'm sure. But this is what we're doing right now. And I implore you to help us. Because every time we make Mumia sound clearer, you know, when we have these power conditioners that are too heavy to lift, we have digital telephone interfaces, we strip out all the wires into our crummy little side office and make them, we make Mumia sound almost as good as he really does sound. If he was free, he'd sound like James Earl Jones. He's recording in a concrete box. And so we bought like a $1,500 waves program to suck out all the noise so that we could really hear him. You know, and I want Mumia out here. I want Mumia to have, you know, what he deserves. 29 years is 29 years far too many. And we've got a few more years. He won't get out tomorrow, but I believe that Mumia Abu-Jamal will get out. And he'll get out because we reach people. He'll get out because Prison Radio is able to maybe do more, inspire more. Every time Mumia's voice is on the radio, on over 100 radio stations all over the world, somebody out there is inspired and moved. And that is the force that's going to help us change the world, change our reality. So I know that's kind of long-winded. But I do want people to get these flyers and try and come out tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock for JR's hearing. It's super, super important. When any of us is attacked, when any of us is defamed, marginalized, we have to stand with him. We cannot let them take JR. So thank you. We're giving out t-shirts in the back, these t-shirts, you can have them, please wear them. They're great, they have a beautiful picture of Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. and a beautiful picture of Mumia on the back with Pam Africa. And also please do sign up on our mailing list, it's the way we can keep in touch with you. While the buckets are circulating, and take your time so you can write a check, we can keep this collection going. We'll have a brief discussion period. So if you have a question for one of the speakers tonight or something you'd like to say, you can have 2 minutes to say it or ask it. And there's a mic for you to use. Anybody? Questions or discussion? If there are not questions or discussion, we're going to go on with the program. Last call.
The brother JR, you know, if people have got to stop talking and come in and sit down, because this brother JR is in some serious trouble right now with this government. And he's due to be to court tomorrow. They're trying to frame him and for setting the fire he didn't set. And excuse me, people in the back. You know, either you can come and sit down, please, and listen to what Brother JR has to say, because it's very important. And you know, please, respect is due here now, in all seriousness. If people got to go to the bathroom, please go, get back. If you need some water, get your water, come back. But, you know, I'd like to say something about JR. It's something I discovered when I was down here. Everybody know that JR works for Bayview. Everybody also know that you'll be able to go up on the internet and on YouTube or whatever it is that he put the information out about whatever is going on that is hurting our community. You look in the paper, you see where he done took pictures of what is happening in our communities. We had an event the other night, and I happened to look around, and I noticed that the event was Santa Rosa. It wasn't being filmed. I said, JR, where's your camera? These was important events, like tonight. And he said, you know, the night that this Oscar Grant, when they arrested them, they took my camera. They took all his equipment. That's like these people taking Mumia's pen, taking the microphone from Noel that, you know, gets that information out. I was totally shocked. I'm saying, well, how come it hasn't been a fundraiser for you to get your equipment back? He said he's been busy raising monies for the lawyer. Well, that's all fair and well. But I'm saying, how many people here appreciate the work that he does and see it as necessary? I know I do on the West Coast. JR needs his camera. He needs our camera. He needs the equipment that is necessary to bring us the information that's needed. So I'm asking people, you know, Noelle, you know, what she needs is very much needed, the financial support for that. But can you dig down in your pocket just one more time and come up with whatever you can come up with? Because I really hope before we leave the West Coast, going back to the East Coast, and I've been doing this, you know, this is the third night, to get enough funds for this brother to have a camera so he can do what is necessary for all of us. You know, when you go up on that his site, you're not gonna find out what happened here tonight. It ain't gonna be there. You know, when you go to look in the Bayview, all the people that is here and what's going on here tonight, the pictures won't be there, the words might be there. But it's important to have these things. So if you can, I'm gonna walk around with that tisket casket. Please put money inside the basket. And don't be handing that basket here, please. And I'm saying, you know, no matter what you can give, and please help us help this brother and get the equipment to help us stay informed about what is going on in our area and what's happening, you know, with our people. One more thing, real quick. JR is jet lagged. And JR, and this week has been to Haiti. He's been to New York, he's been to Miami, he's been down there in LA dealing with the situation with the police and who shot Oscar Grant. We don't have no pictures, we don't have no video because they unarmed him. They unarmed him. You know, so let's give him back the equipment that is, you know, really needed and, you know, get his brother a large round of applause for being a stand-up brother. Don't back down. And I said, and show our appreciation to his warrior brother, JR.
I just want to add one thing to this introduction. Who heard JR's interview with Mumia, where Mumia talked about his own case for one of the first times on this? Okay, it was really good. I want to congratulate him for it. JR is one of the last defendants in the Oakland 100. Victims of the police crackdown on protesters of the murder of Oscar Grant. And he's going to introduce Adimu.
Well, first, I just want to thank everybody for coming and supporting Mumia. The Prisoners of Conscience Committee has been on the case of Mumia, as well as a number of other prisoners. For a long while, we've had the opportunity to tag team with people like Noel, like Pam Africa, Ramona Africa, and the International Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal all around the country, but also all around the world in places like Ireland. And, you know, it's been an experience that has taught me a hell of a lot. Many times I tag teamed with my comrade, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., who's in the crowd today. And also I see Richard Brown of the San Francisco A. Salute. You know, I just think that we just think as the Prisoners of Conscience Committee that we have to do everything that we can to save Mumia's life. Not so much just because he is Mumia Abu-Jamal, but because he articulates situations and social conditions that not too many people get to hear about through the venues that Mumia puts him through. So, you know, today we're gonna introduce Operation Small Axe, our new movie that deals with the case of Oscar Grant. Before I introduce Adimu Majoun, who is the director of the film, I wanna bring up Jack Bryson, whose two sons were with Oscar Grant the night that he was murdered, to give an update as to what is happening with the case. And we were just, you know, the POCC, along with Jack and a number of other different forces, were in Los Angeles Thursday and Friday at a town hall meeting, as well as the hearing of Meserly, the murder trial. So, you know, y'all give a round of applause for Jack, who's been standing up, getting shown live against the police in Oakland.
Excuse me, I'm tired too. I just got back from Los Angeles. Me, JR, Fred, Erica. We were out there, you know, just speaking about the police, Oscar Grant. And man, that was a good experience. I never thought that I would be in this position, you know, to be speaking on the same platform about Mumia, Kevin Cooper, Stanley Ricky Williams, Oscar Grant, Sean Bell. But what we did, we learned that there's a lot of people in Los Angeles that really want to do a coalition with us. So when they moved this case, they thought they were hurting us by moving this case from Oakland to LA. But they were wrong. What they really did is put California on the map. The whole world is watching California now to see what happens with Oscar Grant. So we were in court Friday, and I got there around 6:30 in the morning. Always the first one there to make sure I get in. And when I got there around 7:38, it was like 25 sheriffs. I mean, they're just like, they got like a military force out there just for us people from California, from people all over. So, but, you know, that don't scare me. It just keeps, you know, I see JR, Fred, and we were pretty deep ourselves, but we're deep in spirit, and, you know we're gonna get justice, so that doesn't scare us. So, you know, we go to court, and they're trying to get two charges dropped. His bail reduced, and to get the DA from Alameda to be removed off the case. So I didn't know what they meant by getting his bail reduced. So, we got two victories, and this is coming from the judge that JR informed me. I read the book, but this judge is the one that was in charge of Rampart. So this is what we're up against, a police-loving judge. So anyway, but we got two victories. Johannes Meserly didn't get his bail reduced, and the DA didn't get removed. So what that means, after Oscar's mother explained to me, the reason now he has to come up with another $300,000 to stay out of jail. So keep your eye on that, because I don't know how you can have $300,000 one year and then another $300,000 the following year. So if he doesn't produce $300,000, he has to go back to jail and fight the trial through being in jail. So that's my update.
What about the trial date?
Oh, the trial date starts June 7th. So, you know, we need all your support. Because, man, this is it. If we win this one, it's going to straighten all that shit out about what police do to us and how they do us. I just want to say one thing. After we spoke, we went to a high school, and I spoke at a high school, and I showed the young men the film of Oscar Grant and the young men. And these kids was like, man, they was quiet, and I was almost crying. So then I asked them, this is in South Central Los Angeles, so I said, have any of you been harassed by the police? It's like 25 students in the class. All of them put their hands up. And one kid said, man, I can't stand these white ass police officers. This dude was only 12 years old drinking a root beer soda. No, 14, drinking a root beer soda. The police threw him on the ground, stomped on his back, and thought he was drinking a beer. Then we started talking some more, and they were saying, man, not only on our way home, do we have to worry about going into the hoods, about the gangs and the colors, but we also have to fear, we fear the police just as much. You know, that kind of, man, that blew my mind, so. But a lot of people in LA, they want to get with us. I met this guy last night at an event. He's one of the gang members. He intervenes in crime, gangs, so. We met him, he's a crip, and just all these people just want to get with us on this, so this is very important. So thank you very much.
And I just want to say that Holly Saucy, just so you guys know, she wasn't with us tonight. She wasn't feeling well. And Pierre Labossiere had to fly out to Atlanta to handle some business on behalf of Haiti. But just in his absence, real quick, I just want to say that the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, which Pierre and Walter Riley are a part of, is definitely doing work on the ground. The Prisoners of Conscience Committee was honored to do work with them on the ground when they were distributing water. We was able to bring a doctor and two nurses and set up health clinics and seen within a 2-day period 100 to 150 people free, you know, with 35 boxes of medication. So, you know, they doing real work. You know, Bill, needless to say, Bill Clinton, George Bush, Obama, Wycliffe, none of them are doing work on the ground. The United States military is set up across the street from City Soleil, where people are starving and thirsting to death, don't have clean water. The doctor's seeing worms coming out of children's butts, you know, due to the fact that they're drinking unsanitary water. So, you know, I think that we should all keep an eye on Haiti. We know that it's fading from the news fast, but it's definitely not something that we need to let fade from our memory, and they need all the support we can get. You know, real quick, historically, Haiti was the first African republic to militarily overthrow European colonialists and slave owners. Second off, I want to say that Haiti also helped arm Simon Bolivar for all the indigenous people in Latin America, somebody who was trying to join the countries together against colonialism. So, you know, Haiti is a warrior nation that we need to stand behind and has been for the resistance struggle, for the revolutionary struggle for over 200 years. So without further ado, I'm gonna bring the director of the film, Operation Small Axe. This is Ademo Majum. How's everybody doing tonight? Yo, first and foremost, man, I just want to give a revolutionary shout out to all the revolutionaries in the house tonight. And you know, it's something, you know, when I can come here and I can get inspired by the words of Chairman Fred and Pamela Ramona Africa, long live John Africa, you know? And just be able to come here and get the support from the organizations and the people, I mean, that's what energizes us and keeps us moving and fighting forward, even, you know, in the midst of so many hurdles and odds against us. The film that we did, Operation Small Axe, you know, it was a blessing just to be able to link with JR and really just sit down as young brothers and say, hey man, we gotta do what we can do to get the message out. And we didn't know at that time everything was gonna happen in 2009. This film was not written, it was documented. And our first day of shooting, the film, we had an agent provocateur try to get brothers shot and killed when we was doing a celebration for Oscar Grant, trying to raise money. And so the film took off from there to where it was just divine intervention that we just happened to be at the right place at the right time and really captured the people's sentiment, you know? So the documentary tells a story from the voice of the people, you know? And we feel that that's very important for people to hear, because a lot of the stuff that you might hear in the documentary, a lot of people have said, well, that's not politically correct, or that brother on the street, he used a word that we shouldn't use. And I want people to look past that, because what you're really getting is a glimpse into what the people are feeling in the communities that are being affected by this police brutality and police killings and you know, unemployment and unfair housing. So that's what the documentary is about. Follow Ministry of Information, JR, and man, you know, just so much respect to him, because just seeing how he moves, you know, a lot of people don't realize that the brother's always moving, getting something done. And that's why I felt it was so important for me to capture what he does and the movement going on, because people are not seeing that. So the film is gonna be used to take around the world to show people what's going on. You know, it took us a year to make the film. We went over a lot of hurdles. We got Siraj in the house tonight as one of the cameramen. And really, four of us came together and we got the film done in a year. You know, because we worked 24 hours a day just to make sure we could get the message out. So this is the first time that the film is gonna be shown
And man, I just salute everybody and thank everybody for coming out tonight and previewing the film. We're selling the DVD over here. Our plan is to take the film around the world. And in order to do that, we got to get it in all these festivals. We got to get press out. We got to get posters and things of that nature. So we're selling the DVD so we can keep the movement alive and keep moving to different places. Every time we show the film, we get up and we speak about what's going on in the community. You know, JR has the opportunity to speak to the people about what's going on in Haiti, what's going on in Oakland, what's going on in Chicago and around the world. So this is what we need your support for. Please, thank you for being here. Sincerely hope you guys not only enjoy the film, but it motivates you to, you know, keep pushing on, you know. God bless y'all. Thank y'all so much.
We have a black man that's dead, murdered by pigs.
So I'd like to thank everyone for coming, and thank you. Still stay in touch with all the groups that put this on, because we're going to be doing a lot more. We raised $1,025 at this event, so it was really, really appreciated. It goes a long, long way. We raised $158 for JR's new camera equipment, so thank you so much for that as well. And if you could just help with the chairs and pick up some of the stuff, that would really help us get out of here. And thank you very much also to the Humanist Hall and Dave and crew for a really beautiful spot. Good night.